Welcome to Kidney Journeys, a program brought to you by patients for patients with kidney disease and their families, hosted by The Road Back to Life, a mentoring group for kidney patients. For more information on The Road Back to Life, visit us at www.theroadbacktolife.com. Now here's your host.
We just wanted to thank you for joining us today, whether you're listening to the show or viewing. We have an amazing woman on the show today who has an incredible life story. So you're really in for a special treat, and she's just full of positivity. So we're just really excited to have her on the show today. Lisa, I just want to thank you for being here. We really appreciate you spending this afternoon with us.
Thank you.
And then, of course, just to introduce everybody, I'm Ashley, and I am out here on Camano Island in Washington. Lisa is down in Oregon. And then we have Don here, too, as well, like always. And he is over in Colorado Springs. How are you today, Don?
Doing fine, thank you. We're having a beautiful day here, as I always say, because we are. It's about 91 degrees outside, and it's sunny, and yeah. It's great. And I too am excited. This has been an incredible journey for an incredible person, and very inspiring. And I hope everybody listens to what it takes sometimes to get through. And at the same time, coming out the other side in a very victorious, positive way. So Ashley, without further ado, take us away.
Thank you. And I couldn't agree with you more, Don. She has a great message to share with everybody. So Lisa, why don't we just start at the beginning of your life and you tell us a little bit about yourself and your family and where you grew up?
Well, I grew up in Beaverton, Oregon. I'm a Native American Indian. I was adopted in 1963, November 7th of 1963, in the Dalles, Oregon. It's in the Columbia Gorge. My birth mother was Native American, and I was given up for adoption. My father, whom I was adopted, was Lawrence Custer, and my mother, who was a World War II survivor, a Hiroshima survivor, Minako Yamamoto Custer. I was the only child for a while, and then a social worker remembering the adoption, because my mom and my dad were finally able to adopt after 13 years. They remembered her, and just by sheer chance and accident, my brother that was adopted into the family, who was actually returned by prospective parents, they returned him, and my mom picked him up at the hospital, which was supposed to be for a weekend thing since the DHS office was closed. And I had a brother, believe it or not. It kind of just happened that way.
Yeah.
And so my family, after there was complications with my brother's adoption, the birth mother wanted to take my brother away and sign off. And so what happened was, they went to court, and then I and my brother and my mom, we immediately went up to Beaverton, Oregon. My dad actually was working for Coopers & Lybrand. He was an accountant. And so they immediately got out of the area after the adoptions were final. And by that time, that was about roughly, I was three, four, roughly. And my brother was three. And so I've been raised in Beaverton. I went to school here. I went to University of Portland. I studied international business with the language of Japanese, since my mother was Japanese. And then my dad left my mom after 37 years of marriage, and she was without income. And at that time, I was working at a savings and loan, and I found myself laid off. There was an acquisition. And so I had contacts at CFirst National Bank, went to CFirst, left here at 23, and I stayed up in Washington for 33 years. And that's really when I was in the banking, credit collections, the financial industry for over 33 years. Met and married two husbands. I never had any children. And just really, you know, continued my career there until the bad news of my mother, who had cancer coming back after World War II. It came back. She asked me to come take care of her. I gave a leave of absence. I left my house, my job, and I took care of her till the end of her death. And at that time is when then I discovered I had first symptoms of kidney disease.
Wow.
So for those who didn't catch the name dropping there, you have a lady here who's Native American, who happens to be her dad, on her dad's side, adoptive dad's side, a descendant of General George Custer. And then on her adoptive mom's side, you have another general who was quite influential during World War II for the Japanese, of Yamamoto. You could have came up really messed up. But none of that seemed to enter into your mind at the time. And I think that's a wonderful part right there. And it's a wonderful part of your heritage. I mean, it really is. So when you were
Oh, go ahead.
When you were diagnosed with end-stage renal disease, and at what age was that? And what were your symptoms, and what kind of kidney disease was it?
Well, I was 49 when I experienced the first oncoming issues. The problem was I was in Japan taking ashes to my mother's family cemetery, which is 1,000 years old. Outside of Tokyo. And so as I was there, and even though it was 115 degrees at that time, practically, I was experiencing bloating. I was going to the bathroom far too many times. I was constantly hot. I was tired. And I blamed it for, you know, going to Japan, the stress. I went to Hiroshima, I went to Kyoto, Sapporo, you name it, I was there. And so when I came back to the country through Seattle, I was so sick that I own a home by the airport, and literally just threw the suitcases out on the street and then made a beeline to I-5 to be in Swedish. And so at that time, I just turned 50. That was my 50th birthday going to Tokyo. And so I was there for a couple of weeks, and they diagnosed me with ESRD, the end stages. Now, this is very interesting. I had, prior to leaving the country, my annual, the only thing, and mind you, I don't have diabetes. I'm very healthy, except being at that time overweight. I didn't have any problems. What they said at the time of my annual, that my protein level was a little bit elevated. And she went like this. That's all she said. And this was with a PPO provider. And so when I was at the hospital exhausted, I was, you know, throwing up blood. And it was a terrible situation. I was there for a couple of weeks. And at that time, because I was dealing with two houses in two different states, my treatment was, I was at that time about stage four or so, right to five. And they were trying to, you know, do a quick chemotherapy, things of that nature. And really, I ended up quickly in the diet back actually in another St. Vincent facility in Portland, Oregon, even after that. And that was it. I was in ICU for quite a long time and found myself in the dialysis unit in the hospital.
Did they ever find out what it was that caused that?
No, they did not. And actually, the individual that did this diagnosis at St. Vincent Hospital ironically happened to be one of the men that started the Northwest Renal Clinic here. And he was a medical director. And he only ironically, he really only spends about 3 or 4 times a year at this hospital. He does not go into the hospital, but he just went in there to fill in for somebody, actually. And so me coming there at 3 a.m. in summer, that was just kind of an off chance. So he diagnosed it. He had terrible bedside manner. He just basically, he told me what was going on, and I had 2 minutes to decide how I was going to have treatment for the rest of my life.
Wow.
How did you feel after just having a doctor come in and say you have ESRD, which you probably didn't know what that was?
Oh, I was crushed. I was shocked. Mm-hmm. I had my former husband there, my cousin, and my father, whom was called on an emergency. And they were in the hallway. Nobody was there when he told me, which was good. I didn't cry. I processed the information. I gave it about 10 seconds. And I said, okay, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? He said, well, you only got one of two choices. You've either are going to go to the center, and you have to go to the center in about another 30 minutes. You're going to do what's dialysis. I asked him, well, what's that? He started telling me the process of it and about cleaning of the blood, and I couldn't urinate. I knew that then it was real serious. And then he also said that I was going to have to do this for the rest of my life every other day at a center. And I said, what's my alternative other than doing this? And he said, well, there's something called home therapy, and there's a method that I think would be good for you. And the reason I think it's going to be good for you is because you just seem like the kind of person that would be bored if you were in the center. And I said, bored. Okay. So we did that. We did the PD thing. I was in the center and out of the center on 45 days. Oh. That was the turnaround. I had the house prepared, went to home therapy, which was convenient at that home therapy training near my home. Went there, I did that, and I had 2 care partners in addition to myself. So we had literally a class, chairs, desks, chalkboard, pretend, the sacks and such and the machines. And we were all then certified for that. Now, this is what the problem was. I was still in denial. I was hiding my food. Oh. I was hiding potato chips in my room. I was eating potassium. I was drinking bottles and bottles of water. And I was really feeling that I was smarter than they were, really. No, okay, I've got this disease. I can handle it. You know, I'm Lisa. I've done, you know, I don't know what. I was really egotistical. Didn't listen. I was stubborn.
Well, it sounds like you were being a little stubborn and maybe in denial and maybe not following all the instructions given by a dietitian or a doctor.
But for two years.
So what did you do about that? And how did you change your ways to do what you needed to do to be a healthy kidney patient?
Well, I found myself back in that same hospital. And this time it was a lot worse because the liquid and the potassium caused me to have a seizure. And I, on a Sunday after church, I apparently started going into convulsions. I was swallowing my tongue. The ambulance came here and barely got it and made it. I had so much water and poison in my system. It went really literally to my brain and I went crazy. And I was in the hospital for 3 weeks in and out of ICU hanging on to life. After in experiencing all of that, I was at the bottom. And when you're at the bottom, there's only but one way to look up. And what solidified my decision about changing my life was a doctor, a medical director that came to my hospital bed on a Sunday morning, ranting and raving, and told me I lost my privileges and that I could no longer be in home therapy, and that I defied everything that I said I was going to do and signed documentation that I would do it, and I was in breach of my contract, and that I had to change my evil ways. And it was a sobering moment. I certainly will never forget. And I said, okay. At that time, I got out of the hospital. I asked for a special, the dietitian and the nurse and everybody, you got your medical team. Well, I asked for more attention in the dietary area, and my dietitian would literally come to me every day for about 24 months while I was back in center. Mm-hmm. And I reduced 67 pounds. I got 67 pounds. And I wasn't fat per se, but I'm a very, stocky,
okay,
short, stout kind of, kind of a plug, so to speak, fire plug. We worked on meal planning and big thing, portions, mm-hmm. portions. Mm-hmm. And fluid restrictions, and she gave me measuring cups, and if I drank something, whatever I drank, I put in the cup so I could visually put it there and see my day, mm-hmm. Meal planning, cooking organic recipes, and my center was absolutely just awesome. They were the go-to of all of the meal planning, all of the resources, handouts, and things of that nature. Now, I didn't have anybody to talk to per se as far as a mentoring, but I did have a really good social worker. But my issues of why my health was not doing a turnaround was for the obvious. It was diet. And mind you, it's not just a dietary thing I had to cut off in my life. I had to cut off negative influences, negative people. And I really had to encircle my circle, my tribe were people that were healthy for me. I belonged to a church and my church community was helping me. And they would come to my house and be cooking for me. And they would want to know what I can eat and not eat. And they would go this extra way in doing this, not just like a couple of times. I remember there were a couple of weeks there. They really helped out too. And so it was a combination of these people, but it all came down to my choices. And, you're ultimately in the driver's seat about the choices you make, the people you hang out with, the food you want to eat, which, you know, everything. There's just it's a multitude of things in order to have a well-balanced life. And it was hard. And believe me, there were days when I didn't want to do this. There were days, and the exercise. And all I did was walk. Mm-hmm. First it was a block, then it was two blocks, then it was a couple of blocks, then it was a mile, mm-hmm. then it was 2 miles. And so I would gradually, and it was not a quick thing. It doesn't work that way. Lifestyle changes don't work that way. And it was just, I've just been stepping at it. I'm still working on it. My gosh. You know, I have to not only maintain the health that I have, but I'm in now a new modality. I'm on my third one, and I'm doing home hemo and with the next stage machine. And I've been doing this go on month number, you know, 4. Mm-hmm. And so that, in doing that, that creates something a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And so I have to really even be more careful because I'm my own doctor, nurse, warehouseman, patient, dietitian, you know, and I've used these resources that were given to me and I've built on with these resources. And mind you, I was raised by a Japanese woman, so I know the Japanese diet. So I'm kind of going back to what I used to have when I was young, you know, I was in really good shape.
Well, sounds like they trust you now too. Like you've put in the hard work to do dialysis back at home. And I mean, do you think that all that hard work was worth it?
Oh my gosh, it really was. And you know, the end of this story is that same medical director that kicked me off the first time years ago. Well, just by ironically, because when I did home hemo, I had to travel very far. And it's that same medical director that kicked me off years ago. For him to see me 67 pounds heavier or less, clean diet, a different person, really, because mm-hmm. I am really a different person in so many ways. And for him to see that, and for me to remember him, I've come full circle and then some, you know?
Yeah.
And well, I think Lisa, is the fact remains is that your story is a lot like a lot of other people's story out there. They hear the news, they got ESRD, they don't even know what that stands for when they hear it. And then when they find out what it's about, all they think about is all the horror stories they've heard about other family members or friends or whatever, or they go to the internet and they look there and find all the horror stories there. They don't really look for the positive side of things. And to hear that you've been through that is not unusual, but maybe a little more extreme than most.
Well, you know, it is, you know, and when I was in the center, you know, I had first shift. And so predominantly most of the seats were folks who are in nursing homes, who are much older, who have physical and mental challenges. And, you know, I was the one that showed up in pajamas with sunglasses, you know, listening to the Rolling Stones, right? The place was like a morgue.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I know. I remember when I had my first kidney taken out. Before that, there was these three little old ladies that came in from a nursing home, and they sat right next to each other. And I would go in there and I'd say, "Good morning, ladies. How are you doing today? Love your blouse. Oh, look at that. Nice hairdo. Whatever, you know." And they just sit there, stone faced, and wouldn't answer me. And then I did that for about a year, and then I had my kidney taken out, and I missed a couple of treatments there. I had them at the hospital. Mm-hmm. I come walking in, and I was still hurting. And I came walking in, shuffling in, And the first lady says, "Where have you been? We've missed you." You know, and they're right on down the line. And I went, "Got them," you know. So we impact people no matter what we do in life, but you can impact them for the positive or the negative, and sometimes you can help people turn their lives around too. We're going to continue this story here in part two. And you know, there's a lot more to this. And if you're listening out there and you know, you are on dialysis and you're struggling, you're not alone. No. But you can do this. You can do this. You just got to make up your mind to do it.
Well, it's
change.
You can
change.
Do it.
Yeah, just a second now. Change happens to us all. When we were young and we seen that boy or girl and we fell in love, our life changed. And then we found what we thought was the right one and we got married. Our lives changed again. Then we decided to have kids. Our lives changed again. And what I'm saying is our life is full of changes. And sometimes we don't want to change because we're comfortable where we're at. But this world has brought us around to the point where we're going to have to get off the comfy couch and get out there and do some work.
Yeah.
So we're gonna continue with Lisa here. And for those of you out there, I hope you get a handful of what this lady's been through and how she's overcome. Anyway, this is Ashley and Dawn. And Lisa, saying, be kind to one another.
Bye-bye.
This is Kidney Journeys, and the team at The Road Back to Life saying thank you for listening and for allowing us to be a part of your journey. For more information on The Road Back to Life, visit us at www.theroadbacktolife.com. Also, consider subscribing to our channel so we can keep you updated with new content and videos. Remember, we're all in this together. Now go out and be kind to one another.